École normale supérieure, savoir en multimédia.
It's a great opportunity for me to present my studies, what I've been doing during my postdoc. So what I'm going to talk about today is very recent. So I just started working on that about a year ago. And I just want to acknowledge my collaborators that you can't see, really. So there is Nicola McGeegan. She's a developmental psychologist at Heriot Watt University in Edinburgh. Emily Messer. She's Andy Whiting, a PhD student, and she's been working with me in the Kevechin study. And there's, of course, Andy Whiting, who is a principal investigator in this set of studies. So just a very broad general introduction. What is a prosocial behavior? I think a very consensual definition would be something like this. A prosocial behavior is a voluntary behavior intended to benefit another individual. So one example. So a few years ago, I was traveling with my wife in Morocco. And we arrived in Casablanca, where we rented a car to travel around. And we decided to go to Marrakesh, rather that, and then into the desert, just near the border of Morocco. And at the very end of this road, the very stop point, where you just go into the desert, we broke the car down. So we broke the starter. We couldn't start the car anymore. And on the way back, during a week, we had to ask people to just give us a hand to push start the car every time we would stop. And every time, all the people just were ready to give us a hand and help us just push start the car. So I think that's what we are talking about when we talk of prosociality. Just this sort of kind of spontaneous generosity, giving somebody some help. Okay, so why would we be prosocial? At the proximate level, there is one mechanism, empathy. So we tend to empathize with people, and you've certainly seen this picture many times. And it is probably the most well-known picture of the Vietnam War, and it is thought to have played a role in stopping the war. Why? Because when you see something like this, you just feel bad about it. You just feel bad about what's happening, and you want to do something about it. And what you can do is, for instance, give money to charity or vote for a candidate that is going to stop the war. So one mechanism is empathy, just feeling what others are feeling too. But of course, it's not the only reason why we tend to be prosocial. We can think about it, and we can think that maybe behaving in a prosocial way is better. So for instance, when you buy, say, some fair trade coffee, empathy is not playing a very important role when you just see a fair trade sign. But you might think that buying fair trade coffee is overall better. So you're concerned about the welfare of other individuals for other reasons. And that's why you can behave in a prosocial way. Now, I think all this is very human, and I think that's why Sarah Hardy entitled one of her chapter, Humans Are Wired to Cooperate. So why? Well, young children are eager to give and readily learn to share, even though they sometimes may need some prodding. So children are very eager to share and give. Among non-human apes, however, sharing isn't common, neither spontaneous nor reciprocal. So we are very special. And humans alone, I think she meant among apes, exhibit spontaneous impulses to share with others and are routinely eager to help. So humans are very special. And just to give you one example of chimpanzees sharing some food. So these are two chimpanzees who were in the crop field, so they are raiding a crop. And there's plenty of food, and they are just eating nicely together and sharing food. This is very, very rare. We have a few examples of such behavior. It's very difficult to see and to recall. It happens when they catch some meat, when they catch another monkey, and sometimes in this context. So humans seem to be much more inclined to share food and share services. So cross-sociality, I think, is often seen as a uniquely human capacity that supports non-kin cooperation. This is usually assumed. And indeed, early tests with chimpanzees in 2005, 2006, have shown that chimpanzees do not tend to be pro-social. Okay, but since then, since 2005, 2006, there's been a lot of studies. And, okay, I hope you can see. This is my attempt at summing up all the studies over the last 7 years in just one slide. So it's not perfect, and I'm just going to walk you through all this. So on the y-axis, here is zero, there is 30% on the top and 15% at the bottom, minus 15%. So the y-axis is the difference between the test condition and the empty control condition. So control condition, difference between the test and the control. If this bar is positive, that means that the individuals are more prosocial in the test condition than in the control. If it's negative, that means the opposite. And I've plotted each bar here is one data point. So one particular experiment. It's slightly confounding because sometimes there's just one study, one point is one study, sometimes one point is several studies. So for instance, for the macaques here, this is one study in two different conditions. Is kin, the test is between kin, is between non-kins. So they tend to be prosocial with kin and not so much with non-kin. In this study, for instance, in these 2 points, they are from John Silk, 2005 study, and 1 point is with Louisiana chimpanzees, the other point is with Texas chimpanzees. So it's the same study, but with two samples, which are perfectly independent. Okay. And here, for instance, on this, these four are all in the same studies with the same individuals, so they are not independent. But I think this is the best way to see what the results look like so far. So you've got macaques, the chimpanzees, human children, marmosets, tamarins, and capuchin monkeys. And if you think about one particular hypothesis, the cooperative breeding hypothesis, which suggests that cooperative breeders, individuals will rely on non-parents to help raise the kids. So if you think about this hypothesis, the one Sarah Hard is defending, cooperative breeders are humans, marmosets, and tamarins on this graph. If you have a slightly broader view of cooperative breeding, you can include the capuchin monkeys. And what you see here, that the star indicates a significant difference between between the two conditions, the test and the control condition. And what you see here is that sometimes you find species who are cooperative breeders who are significantly prosocial, such as marmosets or capuchin monkeys. But you also find non-cooperative breeders who are prosocial and cooperative breeders who, despite several studies, are not shown to be prosocial. So the results are not very clear. They tend to be mixed. And we don't know if they support really this cooperative breeding hypothesis. Why? Well, because So the broad conclusion seems to be that humans and other primates are prosocial, while chimpanzees and other apes are mostly not, because it's just one study showing that they can be prosocial. But the results are not very clear because in primate studies, we find a very small effect size So if you look at the difference between the test condition and the control condition, it's mostly below 10%. And there's a large inter-individual variability. So if you look at different responses between individuals, there's this huge variability that confounds the results. And there's no systematic comparison with humans. So we don't tend to use the same protocols when we are testing children and when we are testing primates. So the study that I'm going to present to you today is about trying to make one comparison between chimpanzees, children, and capuchin monkeys using similar protocol, as similar as possible, and trying to compare the amount of prosociality or prosocial behavior. So I wanted to present the chimp results, but we are still receiving them, so I was hoping that we would have something to more finished to show you, but this is not the case. So I'm just going to talk about children and capuchin monkeys. So why capuchin monkeys? Children, it's quite obvious. Chimpanzees are very closely related to us, but why capuchin monkeys? Well, capuchin monkeys tend to have very tight bond between individuals. So here you see the alpha female on the right, and she's found something in the grass. She's foraging for something, probably some insects. And you see another female from the group coming very closely and watching what she's doing. So they tolerate each other very, very well, and she might be able to grab some food. So to take food directly from the alpha female is not a problem in capuchin monkeys. They also bond very quickly with their own children. So here's a female with a few weeks old children, and here is the alpha male, and he's coming over. He's looking at the infant, looking in her eye, and then the infant is reaching for the alpha male. So they tend to bond very, very quickly in the group, and they also share the care of infants. So this is a very old male carrying around a few weeks old infant, probably his grandchildren, and is obviously taking care of the child while the mother is away doing something else, foraging for food or something else. So they tend to be in between truly what we could call truly cooperative breeders. We really need the help of another individual to take care of the infants, and non-cooperative breeders who just don't need anybody. So to do the study, to do the comparison, we used a very classic protocol, which is called a prosocial test. So here's the design. We have two cubicles, and there's one proposer side and one receiver side. And the proposer can reach through these two holes to grab this handle and pull one of these two shelves forward. And the receiver has to wait for the shelf to move forward to reach and grab the food. And what you can see is from the proposer side, the rewards are the same. So it's always the same outcome on the proposer side. And it's always different on the receiver side. So what we are trying to understand is whether the proposer is going to make a decision, take the top or the bottom one, depending on what the receiver is getting, either a large reward or a small reward. So there's two different conditions. One is when the proposer is receiving a large reward. With capuchin monkeys, it was a piece of sugary papaya, which are very fond of, and they don't get very frequently. And another condition, which I'm going to call the envy condition, where the receiver is getting a small reward, which in that case was a monkey pellet. So something that they would get almost with every feed. So in one condition, charity condition, the proposer is receiving a large reward, in the other, a small reward. And it latency and the condition. Now we used two different controls. One self-centered control in which the proposer is in the two cubicles, there is no partition, so she can reach for one of the two shelves and grab a maximum of two large rewards. Okay, so she can move between the two cubicles and get the two rewards on the shelf. Another control condition, the empty control condition, there's a partition and no receiver. So we are trying to see whether the fact that there is a receiver present or not makes a difference. And finally, the test condition, the prosocial test condition. Okay, so it's a 2x3 design. I'm going to show you a quick video to show you how the experiment is working. So capuchin monkeys in the living link center. And the first one is self-centered condition, and it's slowed down. So we start by putting rewards on the proposer side with the two handles, and then on the receiver side. It's a self-centered condition, so the monkey in a Kato can move between the two cubicles. He goes for the bottom one, pull it, and gets a papaya from the bottom shelf. Okay? Now in the next condition, the empty condition, is the same, so it's played at normal speed, except there is a partition. So monkey Carlos cannot go to the other cubicle, and he cannot come and grab the nice, juicy papaya. And in the test condition, there's two monkeys, one on the left, one on the right. The one on the left chooses bottom, pulls, and the two of them get their reward. Any question with the protocol? Yes?
What is the order of the conditions?
So it's all counterbalanced and randomized.
Across subjects?
For each subject.
And how many trials can I do?
So we do... training session, and then we randomize two sets of each condition. For each condition, we do 20 trials. There is 10 trials per session. So every time we enter the room and start doing this, we do 10 trials of one condition. And the trials, large and small reward, are randomized, are counterbalanced within that. Okay? And then we do that twice. We get 20. We change condition, and then we do the whole set twice. So we get 40 trials of each condition.
And there is no reciprocity?
So there is no reciprocity because the receiver is always the same across individuals. So we tested capuchin monkeys and children using the same, very similar protocol. For capuchin monkeys, we used food rewards, so papaya and pellets. We had two different groups. We tested five individuals in each group, and they were very different ages, about 5-year-olds on average. With children, we used two different types of stickers. They had a nice, shiny sticker and a plain white dot. And we went into two different primary schools, and we tested a total of nearly 80 individuals, 34 four-year-olds and 45 seven-year-olds. So to analyze the results, we used a generalized estimating equation procedure, and we were predicting the main effect of condition, so whether we are in a prosocial test, empty control, or self-centered control condition, trial type, whether it's charity trials or envy trials, and an interaction between the two. And we also did exploratory analysis using lots of different factors, looking at whether age, sex, order of presentation, different schools were affecting the results. So what we found is almost exactly what we predicted. We found a main effect of condition for capuchins, 4-year-olds, 7-year-olds, a main effect of trial type for the same three, and then a significant interaction for capuchins and 4-year-olds. And we found no effect of additional factors, except maybe one interaction between order of presentation and condition for the signal. So now, because we found a significant interaction between capuchins and four-year-olds, I'm going to split the results into the two groups. One, I'm going to show you the envy condition and the charity conditions separately.
So in tri-tac, that's envy versus charity?
Yes, envy versus charity. Just to try to make the difference between control, the two control and the test, and the two other type of trials. So in the envy trials for the capuchin monkeys, so all the graphs are going to be organized in the same way. This is the first, the anti condition, then the prosocial, then the self-centered. And on the left, on the y-axis, we have the probability of individuals pulling, taking the prosocial choice. So pulling the papaya, the large reward, to the receiver chamber. Okay. And what you see here is that in the self-centered condition, the capuchins are very good. They are close to 90%. So that means they understand the task. They know which chef to pull to get the nice reward for themselves. Now, this is different from the empty control and the prosocial and the prosocial test. So there is a significant difference between self-centered and empty and prosocial, and no significant difference between empty and prosocial. So that means that the capuchins understand the task and they are not prosocial in that particular condition. Now the results for the four-year-olds are just the same. They're different from the self-centered, they know what's going on, and they don't they are not prosocial. There's no difference between empty and prosocials, and they are no different from 50% from chance. And it's the same for the 7-year-olds. They are not prosocial. So in this context, so you see the proposers were getting a small reward. Now in the charity trials, they were getting the large reward. And for the capuchin monkeys, what you see here is no difference across conditions. So that means that the capuchin monkeys are not understanding the way in which the apparatus works in that particular condition. And why? Well, we're saying that simply what's happening is that in this condition, there is in front of them a very high reward. So they just pay attention to what's in front of them, just looking, trying to get a nice reward as quick as possible. They are not paying attention to what the receiver is doing. Now, more surprising, we found the same results with the four-year-olds. Despite the fact that the four-year-olds were getting a nice shiny stickers, there was no difference between empty and prosocial and self-centered. So they were not more likely to give the sticker to the receiver. And the 7-year-old are different in that condition. So we find that there's no difference between prosocial and self-centered, and both are different than the empty condition. So the 7-year-olds, on the opposite, are really prosocial. But only for charity trials. So let me just comment on one thing that just happened at the end of 2011. So Vicky Arnaud and colleagues published a paper showing that in some context, chimpanzees could be prosocial. So this task is based on the same general principles, but it's slightly different. It's an exchange task. So there's one chimpanzee sitting in a cage, and she's got a bucket full of different tokens. And there's two different kinds of tokens, the blue tokens and red tokens. And if the chimpanzee give a blue token to the experimenter give just one reward to the chimpanzee. And if the chimpanzee choose a red token, for instance, she's going to give two rewards, one for the chimpanzee, which is given the token, and another reward to a nearby chimpanzee sitting in the next cage. So it's the same principle, but different protocol in the way in which we interact with individuals. And what she found is that there's a significant difference between the prosocial test condition and the control condition, and this is above 50%. And quickly after that, Scores published a comment saying that, well, if we were humans and somebody is sitting next to you had the opportunity to be nice to you and was not doing that, then we would consider her to be very mean. So anything below 100%, Scores argue, is not being prosocial. If I have the opportunity to be nice and I am not, then I am mean, is what Scores was arguing. To which, of course, Honor replied, well, that's really not realistic. We can't expect chimpanzees to just be prosocial all the time. That's really not realistic. I agree with Vicky Honor on that condition. In fact, I mean, anybody who's worked a little bit with chimpanzees knows that we're never going to get 100% response. But there's still something true in Scores' comment, I think. What a weaker version of Scores' comment would be, well, anything that is below what the individual would get for himself is not being prosocial. So in the 7-year rule, we find no difference between the prosocial and the self-centered, which means that the 7-year old are as likely to get the reward for themselves as to give the reward to another individual, which I think is really being prosocial. And that is different from the empty condition. So I think on this question, I would suggest that it is not enough to show that there is a difference between prosocial and empty control. We need two controls. We need prosocial and empty controls. They need to be different. And we need no difference between the prosocial and the self-centered to really show that these individuals are prosocial.
It seems to be a very hard test of prosociality too.
Is it?
This test. It seems to be a very hard test of prosociality. So you get it only in 7-year-olds.
Children,
yes.
Yes.
And many people have shown that, like 14-month-old will give information spontaneously to an adult that seems to need it, or open a door or something. So
yes.
Kids are told to be prosocial in the literature based on much easier designs than this one. So I'm wondering, is it not just too hard, the test?
Exactly. That's what we were wondering. So I'm going to answer that in the next few slides. So just to summarize quickly the results so far. So we found that 4 years old and captions are very similar on that test. And we use that test for a specific reason. We want to do the same thing with primates, non-human primates, and human children. So we find that they are surprisingly similar. We weren't expecting 4 years old not to be prosocial at all. When they receive a small reward, they are not more likely to give a large one to the receiver than to an empty space. And when they receive a large reward, they seem to focus on what is in front of them and lose sight of the receiver side. So that would need supplementary experiment to really argue this, but I think that's what's happening there. And 7 years old, on the opposite, are quite different. They behave like the 4-year old and the capuchin in the envy trials, but they are prosocial in the charity trials. But as you just said, I mean, this is not being very prosocial. We would expect the 7-year old to be prosocial even in the envy trials. So we were wondering if the test would just not fit for testing for prosociality. So we went and tested adults, by which I mean undergraduate students, on that test. And luckily, we find that undergraduates are prosocial in both the small, the envy condition, and the charity conditions. So that means that there's something happening between 7 and 17, 18 years old. Now, if there is this developmental trajectory, we can ask, can we become more prosocial if we just witness other individuals being very prosocial And the first test we did, and we don't have the results for the other tests, but so the first test we did, we used the proposers from the study I've just mentioned, and they became receivers for 40 trials. And while they were receivers, we had a new individual coming, being the proposer, and we forced that individual to be prosocial all the time. So if you had been in that experiment, the first thing you would have done was being the proposer, then you would receive 40 trials with somebody who was extremely nice to you, and then you went back with the same receiver as before, and you were retested again using the same conditions.
And the model proposers are not the X receivers?
They are not the X receivers. So we make sure there's no reciprocity in the experiment. So the only difference that we could find, we did that with the capuchin, the 4-year-old and the 7-year-old. The only difference that we could find is for the 7-year-olds who were not highly prosocial in the first study, we found that there is an increase in the prosociality between the two experiments. So empty prosocial and selfish or self-centered is the same as the first study. The results from this first study, empty 2 and prosocial 2 are the results from the second study. And what you find is that there's a difference between the prosocial after having seen the other individual being nice and before, and there is no difference between prosocial 2 and selfish, which suggests again that we reach the level that we had before with the other individuals. Okay, so to summarize, capuchins are like 4-year-olds, they are not prosocial and do not easily become so. By contrast, on average, 7-year-olds are prosocial in the charity condition, but again, we didn't find anything in the envy condition. And those who are not really prosocial in that condition can easily become so. Adults, by which I mean undergraduate students in psychology, are prosocial across conditions, and we don't know yet how the chimpanzees will do, but we'll know soon. So, based on that, let me propose a general hypothesis, which is just a general way of thinking of what's happening here. Young children, 3-4-year-olds, do not seem to be more prosocial than other non-human primates, as far as I have seen in this study. But when they are older, they become more prosocial. So this could be mainly for two reasons. One could be that when they get older, they develop this prosocial tendency naturally. The other hypothesis is that what is a weak primate typical propensity becomes progressively reinforced through teaching and enculturation, so imitation, teaching, watching other individuals being prosocial. But as Anne was saying, children do help. I mean, we know that. One of the best studies example is probably the Wanek and Tomasevo study. So let me show you just what this is about. This is Felix Van Eken. He's walking in the room. There is a child here. Felix is not talking. He's not making eye contact. He's just banging against the door there. And then spontaneously, the child is going to walk over and open the door. And there is no eye contact, there is no talking, there is nothing. So young children do well. But in all the Felix Van Eken and Mike Thomas and other studies, it's always children for adults. It's never children between them. So the context is very different, okay? This is instrumental helping, so I'm helping you to do something. I'm not giving you food or anything. I'm not sharing rewards. And then this is always children versus adults. Is that a problem? Is the fact that we don't find that children are very prosocial when they are very young, 3-4 years old, is it a problem for the cooperative breeding hypothesis? I'm not so sure. When I was preparing the talk, I saw at the beginning that we had something to show against that hypothesis, but I'm not so sure anymore. In cooperative breeders, helpers, the individuals who are helping, are helping parents to cope with infants. So they are helping adults, are helping other adults or infants. So helpers typically will carry young or share food with infants, but this is not reciprocal. Infants are not going to give food back to their helpers. And it does not imply that infants should be really prosocial. So cooperative breeders, in cooperative breeders, it's not clear whether infants need to be prosocial early on. However, infants are typically going to seek help and bond with other members of the group. So they are going to recruit helpers to make sure that they are provisioned with food. So in that context, we can make sense of the difference between the results of Felix Barnack and what we are getting here. Infants are going to be nice to other individuals because they want them to be helpful. But they might not be prosocial toward other infants. So just to conclude, my take-home messages. One is humans might be predisposed to be prosocial. I'm not saying that humans are not predisposed to be prosocial. But I think we should be careful about the amount of prosociality that is just spontaneous and what you learn when you're being taught in school what to do. And just how much is learned or not really matters for comparative studies. What we are trying to see is whether this tendency is stronger in other primates or in humans. It doesn't really matter if individuals are prosocial or not. What we want to know is how much they are prosocial. And are children, very young children, 3-4 years old, prosocial? I don't know. But I'm not sure it matters for the cooperative breeding hypothesis anyway. So let me thank, again, all the people who have been helping me on this study. There's been lots of people involved, 80 children, 2 different primary schools. And we thank you for your attention.